Yeah. Nama Chardrish Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Bhain Sakaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Sarigo Bhaktivin Ki Jai. Sri Sri Radha Krishna Goku Vinyas Sham Kunradha Kunigiri Gurthan Ki Jai. Vrindavan Tham Ki Jai. Navadip Tham Ki Jai. Jagannath Puri Ki Jai. Gaurmai Ki Jai. Jamanamai Ki Jai. Tulsi Devi Ki Jai. Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. Samaveda Bhakta Vrindaki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. Gaur Premanande. Welcome inside. The fates have brought us here today. You might want to fill up these empty chairs over here. Or you might not. So we're still on the ninth chapter. That's the chanting subject for today. Shri Bhagavan Vasha Idam Tu Te Kunatamam Prabhasham Yansuyale Gyanam Vijnana Sahitam Yajyatva Moksha Se Shubha Raja Vidya Raja Kuryam Avaitram Idam Uttamam Pratyaksha Adam Haryam Susukam Kartam Avyayam Ashadha Purusha Sarvam jagata vyata murtina mahasani sarva bhutani rajam desha vastita najarvasani bhutani pashyame yoga maishwaram bhuta brahmana cha bhutasto mamata bhuta bhavana yata akasha stito nityam vayu sarvatra go mahan tada sarva Bhutani, Vastani, Jivaraya, Sarvabhutani, Kauteya, Prakriti, Manikam, Kalpakshaye, Gunastani, Kalpada, Vishyamyam, Prakriti, Svana, Vashtavya, Vishyami, Puna, Puna, Bhutagrama, Nivam, Krishnam, Avasham, Prakriti, Vashat, Nachamatani karmani nivadanti dharantaya Udasina vasina asakam deshu karmasu Maya dakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam Etunane nakamdeya jagadvi parivartate Apajanti mahmurva manushin karmashritam Mahatmanas tu mam partha, daivi prakriti mam. Well, welcome inside. We just ended up here today by some arrangement of the gods. And we can take a straw vote at the end, or a real vote at the end of the class, and find out who wants to meet here tomorrow and who would rather meet outside. Excuse me? Depends on the weather. Well, the weather is going to be pretty much like it is today. That is to say, you can expect it to get much better. May or may not get a bit worse sometimes. But
you know, we can go on meeting here if you like, regardless of the weather, or we can resume our outdoor activities, or we can play it by ear and, you know, scramble out if we like it, or scramble in if we don't like it. Who's going to remind me? Okay. A little before we end. Or even by the break, you should know what you want to do, right? Okay. Om Gyan Tinidam Tasya Dinam Dinam Shikaraya Shashur Nidhidam Dinam Tasmai Shikaraya Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishram Sahabitam Dinam Well, it is warmer here. All that nice carbon dioxide keeps us warm. Okay. Last week we began chapter 9. We were talking about, among other things, how Krishna sends out the entire cosmic manifestation and pulls it in again. How the entire cosmic manifestation, regardless of what atheistic scientists think, works under Krishna's control. There's a cause behind everything. The ultimate cause is Krishna. Sarvakaranakara. Now, not everybody agrees with that. There are those who have a different point of view. No one should sit on the tiles here unless you're intent on getting sick. Marble or tile or whatever it is. Be nice and cold. Suffer. We know devotees don't suffer, but it just seems as though you're sick. Okay. So there's a certain section of people who don't accept Krishna as the personality of Godhead. They're mentioned in this next verse as
Mudha,
fools. Abhijananti ma mudha manasham tanvashrita parampava majananto mamabhuta maheshwara. The earlier we read, avyaktim vyaktim apanna manyante mamabhutaya. The less intelligent persons think that the original unmanifest appears in manifest form as Krishna, that from the impersonal absolute, he takes on a personal form constituted of material elements. So here Krishna says, the people who deride me, abhijananti, mamudha, they're fools. Asses is really what he says. Manasham tanamashrita. They think that I've taken shelter of this human form. That's what they think. They think that originally I'm impersonal and that I've appeared in a human form made of material nature. In other words, they think I'm a common man. Param bhava majanato, they're ignorant of my superior nature. Mama bhuta maheshram, and my supreme position as the Lord of everything, Maheshwara. Maheshwara means the Lord of all the other lords. There's so many Ishwaras, from the smallest Ishwara to the biggest Ishwara and controllers. And Krishna is the supreme controller beyond all, Mamabhuta Maheshwara. The Prabhupada gives some evidence from different Vedic literature that Krishna can't have a material body. Material body can't do all the wonderful things that Krishna does. Sachidananda Rupaya Krishnaya, Sachidananda Vigraham, so many different places, Prabhupada's quoting the statements that Krishna is Sachidananda Vigraham. And still there are so many scholars and commentators who think that Krishna is an ordinary human being. They just don't get it. And Prabhupada gives a good argument. If a soul surrendered to Krishna, because Krishna says, if you surrender to me, you get past material entanglement. If a soul surrendered to Krishna can get out of the influence of material energy, how can the Supreme Lord, who conducts the creation, maintenance, and annihilation of the cosmic nature, have a material body like us? Just by knowing Krishna, you get free from material existence. What must be Krishna's position? Then he, in one of those bonus verses that you get, actually two or three of the bonus verses that you get in this edition, we find that the sages asked about Krishna appearing to be like a human being. He played like a human being. And so masked, he performed many superhuman acts. In so many ways, Prabhupada's giving strong evidence in this purport that Krishna's form is transcendental and that only fools and rascals would think that he is an ordinary human being, as fools and rascals generally do think. Krishna is a hero, Krishna is a politician, and Krishna is, if you've ever seen some of these really bad Mahabharata movies, the bad Mahabharata play, highly acclaimed dramatic performance by a world-class director, in which Krishna is portrayed really like a mundane, smart-aleck politician. He just doesn't get it. The director just doesn't get that Krishna is transcendental. Although the whole subject of the Mahabharata ultimately is Krishna, he just takes it as a great epic and appreciates it and relishes it without understanding Krishna. He misses the whole point. And there are so many scholars similar to that. He was advised by one great scholar. She's no longer present. But anyway, there's so many people who have a mundane opinion of Krishna. And Krishna clearly identifies them here as asses. Any comments or questions about that? Yeah, you turn it over, you get your mic.
Mm-hmm. How does this relate, this verse relate to the old, anthropomorphic argument that we project our form onto God? Is it
any? Well, basically it says it's wrong. That is the old... in fact, I saw recently a book by a Jewish scholar where he's saying that basically in the Bible there are two ideas of God. There's God as the... there's the sort of sophisticated idea in which God is beyond all material qualities, beyond all material considerations. And then there's the sort of primitive anthropomorphic idea where he has human attributes. So he just right away gives us his value judgment between the two ideas, that the old anthropomorphic, the old idea that God is a person, is sort of a primitive anthropomorphic idea. Although there's no one around at the time the Bible was written to say, well, yeah, we decided that we needed God to have a personal form like us, so that's why we made this up. But he's figured out that that's what they had in mind.
No, he actually meant just the opposite of what he said. He said man is, or it says man is made in the image and likeness of God, and they say that's just
the... yeah, it's the other way around, that God is made in the image of man. Right. Let's take their... they have a problem, which is as follows. They've figured out God by saying, okay, they have this personal God, because they've projected their own personal attributes onto the Absolute. Okay? The Absolute really has no form, no qualities, no name, no none of this human razzmatazz. That's all all non-philosophical and primitive. But they've projected all of this stuff onto the Absolute, and so they've made this human-like figure who has emotions and who gets angry and gets jealous and has some love also, and who has hands and stretches forth his anthropomorphic hand to across the waters and does all this kind of stuff. But we know that he's not really like that, but people need to think of something tangible, so they've created this anthropomorphic God. They've created, as you say, God in the image of man. Okay, so you've got that. All right, now you've explained God. Now, how the hell do you explain man? Where does he come from? How does this impersonal absolute, lacking form, lacking qualities, lacking desires, because that's another personal attribute, lacking intelligence, because that's another personal attribute, lacking all of these things, just being, you know, the abstract ground of all being, how the hell do you get all of this from that? You're sophisticated. You don't believe in all this anthropomorphic rot. You're advanced. Now you explain to me how from this impersonal ground of all being you get all this infinite variety with all these smart creatures walking around. Oh yeah, it all evolved from a little bubble, blah blah blah, blah. Where'd that come from? How did this ground of all being come up with the first little bubbles?
Yeah. So, it's very interesting. This person. What do they say about?
What do they say about this?
Yeah, oh, they avoid.
Well, first thing they say is well.
Well, getting it.
That's a very good question. They really don't have a good answer. I'm sure they can say all sorts of things, but they have the same. This is basically the problem, the core problem that the Maya bodies have. If the ultimate source has no variety, where does variety come from? That's the question that the impersonalists can't answer. They are stuck with that. And they have various ways to try to get around it. Well, these varieties you see are not really here. It's just illusion that makes it seem like all these varieties are here. Okay, yeah, and that illusion, where did that come from? Well, you see, because right away, as soon as you have illusion, you have variety. There's the absolute, and there's illusion. My arithmetic, that comes to two, not one. So they have a problem. You know, where does variety come from? Well, okay, if it comes from illusion, where does illusion come from? They're stuck. If you ever, you know, meet a Mayavadi in a dark alley, this is what you do to them. You know, you just stick on this one point. Where does your variety come from? If the absolute, if the ultimate entity has no variety, has no features, has no qualities, has no nothing that could be described as a variation, if he's just homogeneous oneness, he or it is just homogeneous oneness. How from homogeneous oneness does all this variety spring up? Even, you know, from oneness you can get variety, but that means the variety has to be there in the oneness to begin with. Like from sunlight, you get varieties, but that means you get colors. But it means it's there originally. Otherwise you couldn't get it. Or from milk you can churn out some butter. But it means it's there to begin with. Otherwise you can't get it. From water you can get minerals, but the minerals have to be there. So you can't have just homogeneous, absolute, no variety oneness and get varieties out of it. That's really creation ex nihilo. It's, you know, like nothing, you're getting something. Well, that's the other way they take it. Well, everything, you know, you get the void people, and nothing's real, it's all, you know, that has the same problem. How did all this fancy stuff pop out of the void? Mm-hmm.
A dramatic example I experienced of how this new Vishesha is really, is calling the shots, even amongst so-called monotheistic religions, was during the U.S. Centennial in 1976, we did some kirtan in L.A., and I was distributing books around a Christian float. And there were archangels, there was Moses, then there was the throne where God was sitting, there was a crown above the throne, and there was nobody on the throne.
Oh, yeah.
That's, you know, it's all nirakar, it's all nirguna. It's, you know, they had nobody on the throne, they had a crown dangling above it.
I've got a Bible software that got sort of an electric person that he's formless.
And similarly, Allah is practically impersonal. And I think in the Jewish tradition, too, it's not much person.
Prabhupada's, you know, without getting too deep into religious waters where we're over our head, Prabhupada's observation was that generally religionists, people of various religions, tend to be impersonal. Now, there are personalists also within most religious communities, but there tend to be strong forces for impersonalism. In the Jewish tradition, especially Moses Maimonides, if I'm not wrong, argued very strongly against the idea that God could be anything as limited as a person with actual qualities and features and all of that. And he's, of course, one of the giants of modern semi-modern Jewish thought. So you get this tremendous sense of not just that we don't know what God looks like, we don't know what God's form is, he's beyond it, but you get, he cannot have a form, he cannot have qualities, he cannot have a name, he cannot have any of these things, because those are all limiting. As soon as we say qualities, form, personhood, we're limiting God, we can't do that. So by their mental speculative powers, people come up with an impersonal idea. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met the Patans, who later became Vaishnavas, and proved to them from the Quran that God is a person, that they had received from their teachers some sort of impersonal idea. The Vaishnav tradition is very strong in personalism, not only philosophically, but experientially through the presence of the deity. We get the presence of a person, which distinguishes, of course, a Vaishnav place of worship from a temple, a Jewish temple, or a mosque, or various kinds of other institutions where, you know, a person is not to be, is strictly not to be seen.
It's practically blasphemous.
Oh, absolutely. In some traditions, any idea of depicting any sort of person would land you in deep ostracism at the very least. There's no question of God being depicted with anything specific. And in Christian traditions, there are various degrees of that. The strict Protestants, who are absolutely anti-icon, the Greek Orthodox, who tend to be pro-icon, but their pro-icon tends to be toward Jesus, toward various other personalities, but not so much toward God, who's sort of left out of the iconography. Anyway, that's We didn't come here to do
Prabhupada uses that word, iconography, in Krishna book.
Yeah.
Krishna has appeared to remove all imaginative iconography of the absolute truth is.
Yeah, Prabhupada uses these two words, iconographers and iconoclasts. The iconographers are people who make up their own pictures of God, and the iconoclasts are the ones who smash the pictures of God, including the ones that follow the scriptural description. So, probably wanted to put us apart from both sections.
One last thing. It's interesting to me that in every tradition, even though the official church is more or less impersonal, you go to the mystics in those traditions and somehow they're connected with a personal idea of God. At least I know in what the Sufis and Muslim, and then you get this idea in Christianity too, where if you go to some mystics in those traditions and they're really connected to a person.
Yes and no. There are mystical strains that are almost Shankarite in their approach to things.
I'm thinking of the Bride of Christ, you know, the nuns.
Yeah. You've got the bridal mysticism, and you do have intensely personal strains in various religious traditions. But you also have among mystics, you've got the mystics who are who've realized that everything is one, and all of that. So it's hard to make a generalization that just wherever you go, the mystics are all personalists. There's all sorts of weird mystics out there. Yes. We have a verse?
Yeah, many people said reciting on the house that Akhanda Mandala Karam Vyaptam.
Akhanda
Mandala Karam Vyaptam Jena Characharam. Tat Padam Darshitam Jena Tisme Sri Guru Vino. Many times.
Where is it from?
I don't know.
That's the first problem.
Yeah, because who has composed this verse? Because it seems that Tat Padam, in one sense, they are saying that the Supreme Lord who has no form, nothing else.
Yeah, there are verses that say that he has no form, he has no name.
And then they are saying Tat Padam means that feet. He which was seen by whom he just was immersed. Like Tat Padam Darshitam Jena, by whom Tasmai Sri Guru Venava. That Gurudev.
Yeah, so I offer my respects to the Guru who's seen the feet of that nameless, formless.
Yeah.
Well, that's okay, you know, the nameless, formless, etc. can be seen by the person who's gone from Brahman realization to Paramatma realization to Bhagavan realization. What is that? Niranmayena patrena satyasyapi tamukam. My dear Lord, please remove the glare of the headlights so that I can see your form. You know, when you've been in the headlights of a car. The car shines its bright headlights on you. Everything's one. You can't see anything. So when they dim the lights or when you step aside, then you can see the car. Otherwise, all you see is bright light. So there are many Vedic verses, no form, no qualities, da 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 da. But we understand that to mean no material form, no material qualities, no material name.
So the Prabhupada in the Krishna book, the conversation sometimes says that God actually has no name, but he's given name according to his activities.
Yeah.
But I understood that Krishna's name is eternal.
That's also there. It's not that he's temporarily given a name. But Prabhupada's conceding there, all right, God has no name. But his name is according to his qualities. Eternally. Taking it that, all right, God has no name, but according to his qualities, he has a name. Or according to his activities, he has a name.
That is a debating point. In talking about the
Yes. Not that God is originally formless. And then
he was given names.
Yeah, somebody came up with some names for him. He's got them always.
That's a corollary to that. That's a corollary to that question. I think in the Govindan Lila, Indra gives Krishna the name Govinda.
Yeah, there are all these names and things that happen, like who is it that gives Krishna the Sudarshan disc?
Agni. Varuna.
Varuna, he gives Krishna the Sudarshan disc, somebody else gives him something, and Lakshmi is generated for the Lord out of the ocean, and all these things have some point in historical narrative. But the historical narratives are just telling us something about the Lord's eternal situation. It's not that he didn't have a Sudarshan disc, but it becomes manifest through this pastime. Or not that Lakshmi, you know, he didn't have Lakshmi and then he got her. And they pumped up the ocean a little bit. She was there, but this is how it becomes manifest.
In this world.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
Yes.
Maharaj, we often hear that the Lord performs extraordinary activities to our tribal thieves and to delude the Yetis. So somebody may say that if the purpose is to delude the Yetis, then it is correctly written that fools will deride me when I descend into human form. So how do we answer this?
It's incorrectly written?
So, like, the Lord is performing the activities to delude the Yetis. If the purpose itself is that, then the fools will definitely deride him.
Yeah. Fools deride me because I've arranged it that way. They don't want to know anything about me, so I've worked it out, and so they're fools. I do a good job. When I want to make somebody a fool, he turns out a real damn good fool.
So that's the desire. He already has the desire.
The person wants to be a fool, so Krishna, that's why he's here in the material. Everyone in the material world more or less wanted to be a fool. Some of them are more persistent and aggressive about it than others. Those who really are pushing hard to be the biggest fools, Krishna says yes. Think that everything's impersonal, that I came out of, I'm an ordinary human being, that nature does everything. Okay? Anything else? Shall we move ahead? We better. Mahatmanas tumam partha daivim partha devantata. Vajantyananya manaso. Oh, whoa. We skipped a verse. Moghasha mogha karmano. Mogha jnana vichetasa. Vichetasa. Rakshasim asarim chaiva. Prakritim mohanim shutaha. Good strong verse. Mogha means baffled, bewildered, frustrated. Mogha, it comes from mu, which means bewildered. Mogha. So, moghasha, all of their hopes are baffled. They're hoping to build, they want to build a world of peace and happiness. They want to have a world where, at least within their family, there's love and understanding and satisfaction. They want to have a world where so many good things happen. And finally, all of their hopes are smashed. Their girlfriend leaves them, their son turns out to be a crook, their money is lost on the stock market, or everything goes fine and then they die. But finally, all of their hopes are smashed. Moghasha. And mogha karmana, all of their pious or impious activity is finally smashed. And mogha jnana, all of their development of high intellectual activity, all of their knowledge, is finally bewildered. Maya pratigyana. Stolen away by Maya. Why? Vichetasa. Because they're turning away from Krishna. Vichetasa. Turning away from Krishna. Asarim rakshasim chaiva. They're rascals, demons, and rakshasas. Asarim rakshasim chaiva. Prakritim mohanim shrutaha. Prakritim mohanim shrutaha means taking shelter of the material energy. They take shelter of their government, they take shelter of their home, they take shelter of their family, they take shelter of their armed guards, they take shelter of their knowledge, they take shelter of their money, they take shelter of something that comes from the material energy. And finally, mohanim shrutaha, they're bewildered by it. They think everything's okay, but it's not going to be okay. Prakritim mohanim shrutaha.
Yes.
Indirectly, they're actually taking shelter of Krishna.
Hmm? Indirectly, yeah. They're taking shelter of Krishna, but indirectly. Indirectly doesn't work so well.
They take shelter of man-made gods also.
Yeah. They take shelter of so many man-made gods. They take shelter of this Baba and that avatar and this Kalki avatar, or, you know, something crazy.
50,000 rupees liberation. 50,000 rupees only liberation.
50,000 rupee liberation. Cheap.
Liberation from
50,000. he's liberated from 50,000. In so many ways, they're taking shelter of something that can't endure, something that's going to be smashed. And they're taking shelter of Maya, and Maya says, I smash you. This is the result when you turn your back on Krishna, and then you have to take shelter. Everyone, we're shelter-seeking entities. You know, like these creeper plants, they have to grab on to something. And like women, you know, they need to have a husband or a boyfriend or a counselor or a priest or something that they hang on to, because that's the nature of women. They're dependent. Or a son or a father. The living entity is Prakriti. He has to take shelter. But instead of taking shelter of Purusha, Parama Purusha, the Supreme Personality of God, they take shelter of his interior energy. And therefore, they are bewildered. It's Prakriti. They're taking shelter of the bewildering energy. It's like, you know, if you've ever had to fight a legal case and you've taken shelter of a lawyer who's a cheater, what happens? You're depending on this person to defend you, and meanwhile, he's making a deal with your opponent to screw you. That happened in. And the lawyer's working with the other guy. So you're dependent, but who are you depending on? The person who's out to cheat you. So we're depending on the material energy, but the material energy is constitutionally bewildered. So this is the result. Prabhupada also quotes here another bonus verse, that if you see somebody who's the face of someone who thinks that Krishna has a material body, then let's see. And so such a person should be just driven out, and if you happen to see him, you should take bath in the river with all your clothes. That's how highly esteemed these people are. Any questions? Comments? Okay. Good strong verse. Mahatmanas too much. Yes?
I think it was this verse that, based on this verse, Prabhupada told Sanskrit Maharaj to write a book about how everything without Krishna consciousness is a failure.
Will fail, yes. Everything without Krishna consciousness is a failure. Okay. Thanks for reminding me about that.
To see this verse become true, do we have to take a longer term vision as opposed to the shorter term vision? Because often materialists seem to be very successful.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes longer term, sometimes shorter term. Sometimes people get bewildered right away. Their hopes are smashed, you know, from day one. First day at the racetrack, you know, they lose all their money. Some people, it's, you know, after 3 years of betting, you know, they built it all up, and then boom. So, yeah, it's not always the first day, but sooner or later they get it.
And ultimately.
And meanwhile, they're... Actually, they're bewildered from day one, but the rug finally gets pulled out whenever Krishna decides to pull it out from under. Yeah, we don't always see that they're frustrated and so on and so on. But sooner or later, catch it up. Mahatmanas tumam partha daivim prakritim ahataha dvantyananya manaso gyatva bhutanim abhiyam. Two means?
But.
On the other hand, there are these guys who take shelter of the material energy and get bewildered. And then there are those who are broad-minded persons. Mahatma, no, can mean mind, so Mahatma is broad-minded. Broad-minded person, or great soul, it can also mean. they take shelter of Daivim Prakritim, the spiritual energy, the divine energy. In Nectar Devotion, Prabhupada comments, what is this divine energy? Srimati Radharani. Srimati Radharani is the divine energy that takes shelter of Krishna and his spiritual energy. Vajantya Ananya Manasa. Ananya Manasa means?
Without any other thoughts in the mind.
Without any other thoughts in the mind. Single-minded.
Uninterrupted.
No, it's not interrupted. It's Ananya Manasa, with no other mind. Single-minded. No other business. Ananya Manasa. Gyatva Bhuta Adimabhya. Knowing that I'm the original source of everything. Daivim Prakritam Ashrita. He does not divert his attention to anything outside Krishna. That's Ananya Manasa. Ma maybe ye prapajante maya. He surrenders to me. Crosses over. Any other questions or comments here? Okay. Satatam kirti yanto maam yutantas cha vrita vrita namasyantas cha maam bhaktya nitya yukta upasate. This is that verse, remember I told about that conversation or correspondence Prabhupada had with that professor? What was the significant word Prabhupada said on maam, me? Yes, it means chanting, speaking, murmuring, but about whom? Certainly Krishna. The significant word is Ma. Oh, Professor G. The significant word you seem to have missed in this verse
is Ma.
Satatam means constantly, always. Satatam kirtiyanto. Ma, you're always chanting about me, Krishna, not about somebody else. Yatantas cha dritha putaha. Endeavoring, yeah? Yeah, fully endeavoring. Dhritavrata. Dhritavrata means? With strong determination. Namasyantas. Jamam bhaktya. With bhakti. Nitya yukta upasate. They're always upasate? Engaged, actually. Prabhupada say it that way?
Worship,
okay. Upasana, yeah. They're always worshipping me. Nitya, they're always connected with me. And Prabhupada begins by saying that you can't rubber stamp a Mahatma. He seems to have someone particular in mind here. That one who's attached to the personality of Godhead is actually a Mahatma. There's an interesting paragraph at the end of page 419, for those who have a page 419 here. Prabhupada talks about Ekadasi, which is tomorrow, fasting on certain days and other such activities, rules and regulations offered by the acharyas for those who actually want to get admission into the association of the personality of Godhead in the transcendental world. The Mahatmas, great souls, strictly observe all these rules and regulations, and therefore they are sure to achieve the desired result. Notice Prabhupada's gloss there. Instead of saying the Mahatmas are those who are beyond all rules and regulations, who are free as birds, and the Mahatmas are those who strictly follow the rules and regulations. How about that? Mm-hmm.
Maharaj, we hear that on the higher levels of devotional service, one goes beyond all rules and regulations and they do not apply to him.
Yeah, that's there in Bhagavad Gita. Were you here? Have you discussed the third chapter? So what's the other side of that argument?
What happens
first? He has no need to follow the rules and regulations. And what else?
He still follows me. He follows them because Krishna wants him to follow them.
First thing is, he has no reason not to follow the rules and regulations. He has no reason to follow them, he has no reason not to follow them. But he follows them to set the example for others. Even Krishna says, even I follow them. What would happen if I didn't follow them? Yeah, the whole world would go to hell. Specifically, what would happen? Yeah. How does that make... Why does that happen? If I don't follow prescribed duties, how does it happen that there will be unwanted progeny?
Well, you'll stop following or giving oblations, and then irreligion will persist. And because of irreligion, like father, like son.
Yeah, you're unwanted, so your children will be unwanted. Okay. Naveen, did you want to say?
The elders are not protected, then the women are not protected, and then there will be unwanted progeny.
Yeah. Something else?
In that report, I believe Prabhupada said that Krishna is the supreme authority. So if he doesn't set the standard, then monkey see, monkey do. That's not what Prabhupada said, but people will just start to do whatever they want.
Yeah, basically what you hit it on the head, really what I was looking for. If people aren't engaged in prescribed duties, what will they do? Finally, they'll come to the point, they'll just screw. Which for those in the audience who aren't from America and Europe, just means to have sex like cats and dogs. That's finally what it comes down to. If you're not engaged in prescribed duties, well, you've got to do something. Got to be happy somehow. What does it come down to? Well, finally, they'll cat and dog it up. That's finally what it comes down to. Right? Just like our own members. If they start giving up the rules and regulations, what comes next? Pottery? Illicit sex. That's, you know, if you're going to go for it, go for it. That's what everybody winds up doing, practically speaking. So if I don't strictly follow prescribed duties, I'll be called the cause of unwanted progeny, because illicit sex, sooner or later, you know, this doesn't work or that doesn't work, and out pops a little kid. Unless you kill it first. So Krishna says, even I strictly follow prescribed duties, otherwise everything goes to hell. Sankaro narakasyaiva. So, okay, the great souls don't have to perform any prescribed duties, but still they perform them. If you look at the Goswamis, they were the maximum sadhakas. You know, we're performing sadhana, but what is our sadhana compared to Sanatana Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami? You know, we're just kidding around. Yeah, bhakti light. It's said about Sanatana Goswami, I think, that his sadhana was so strict that it was like a line in stone. Is that Sanatana Goswami? Raghunath, Rupa, or Sanatana? See, we're not sure. They were all so strict that we're not quite sure about it. Somebody has a database that can look up line in stone and Goswami and see who you get.
Sanatana Goswami used to go parikrama to Govardhan and
say. Yeah, I mean, they were strictly. Sankhya Purvaka Namagana Natibi Kalabasan Nikrito. They were doing everything.
That's Raghunuga Bhakti, right? They like.
Yeah, that's Raghunuga Bhakti. They, not that, okay, ditch the rules and regulations, but when they follow the rules and regulations, they really get taste. Or they really have taste for doing it. So they're Mahatmas, not those who say, you know, get up there and say, you know, who show it up and say, you know, all these rules and regulations are coming from a batch of uptight old men who don't understand what spirituality really is. So, yeah, and then you become very popular, of course, and you're considered very profound by the cats and dogs and monkeys. They think you're really onto something. But the actual Mahatmas are strict. They follow these rules and regulations.
It seems that Raghunuga Bhakti is misunderstood as being without rules and regulations. It's really that one follows the rules and regulations, not because one wants to follow the rules, but to please Krishna.
Yeah, I probably mentioned that sometimes those who are beyond the rules and regulations go beyond the rules and regulations. They do something that's not very... they lie down in the temple or something because they're in seeing things from a different perspective. But generally, their life is full of strictly following the rules. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, how strictly he was following the rules and regulations. Hmm? Did you find that? Yeah. Line in stone in quotes.
And in the 18th chapter, Krishna makes it plain that people who perform sacrifice, charity, and penance, they get purified doing it. It's not that they just do it to set an example, but
yeah,
they're also further purifying.
Yeah.
Bhavanani Manishinam.
Bhavanani Manishinam. Yeah. Okay. There's also a last point here that the Mahatmas, basically Prabhupada says that devotional service is easy. You don't have to undergo severe penance and austerity. Just live in devotional service guided by an expert spiritual master. And whether you're a householder, a sannyasi, a brahmachari, whatever you are, you can perform devotional service to Krishna and become actually a Mahatma. A great soul. But Mahatmas are not some strange species that have to be viewed from a great distance. You also should become Mahatmas. Okay? Break, right?
Yeah.
Okay, till 3:15. We get a clock here. It's one of the great facilities of this room. You get a clock. Get to survey all the great entities.